Yes, I'm still me. I'm still Michael Edema from AMN. We were acquired by AMN. I used to work for Range. I still technically work for Range Networks. And I've been there since 2012 or 2013, beginning of 2013. So I've been there for quite a while. That's the OpenBTS people, in case you don't know who that is. Probably everyone knows who that is, I would guess. Anyway, I'm very glad to be here. And I'm going to do, I guess if you sponsor a bit of a event, you could just change your title of your talk when you get there. So it will not be called Operating Open Source Mobile Networks at Scale. It will be Open Source Mobile Networks Are Real Mobile Networks. Because I constantly see posts on the list about, can I hook this up to like a real thing? Can I make a real network with it? So this is a bit about that. We actually build real networks with all Osmocom stuff. So we are operating in all these countries. AMN stands for Africa Mobile Networks. Finden and Fela, what's wrong with this list of countries if we're called Africa Mobile Networks?
Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil, Guatemala, Panama. Yeah, so we're expanding into areas outside of Africa now. Panama and Guatemala, Brazil coming soon. And so I didn't know what to call it. I just made this up. That'd be everywhere mobile networks. I don't know. I have a joke at the bottom of the slide. It can't be seen. This is my unofficial name for the company. It's not an indication of future investment advice. So where do we have integrations with Osmocom and Range technology? We already have it in these countries. So we'd have it in Benin, Cameroon, Congo, DRC. Guatemala's coming up, Panama's coming up, Nigeria, Rwanda, Sudan, Madagascar, Liberia, and Ivory Coast. I say those because it has taken months and months and months. So I think I should give them at least 1 second of audio to represent the time it took to integrate 2G in those countries. Yeah. So I want to read this list incredibly slowly because we had to also go through the pain of integrating 3G in these countries. So I will not read them aloud, but they're in hot pink because that was quite the thing. Quite the learning experience for me, having very little 3G experience. How much capacity do we have right now? I had to look. We have 50 BSCs, 14 RNCs, doing about 12 million minutes a day. And of that, this is how much is running on top of Osmocom. About half, just over half of the minutes per day. And all with about 95% availability. It's 6 RNCs, because it's not really an RNC, it's a home node B gateway, but when you're doing these integrations, they refuse to call it anything but an RNC, so that's fine. I will call it an RNC here too. So that's 33% of all sites, but we're punching above our weight a little bit. We're doing 52% of all the minutes, and now already 14% of all data for this network. What kind of installs do we do? Usually small installs. Bring your own everything. There's nothing there. And so you have to bring backhaul and power and infrastructure and mount it. This is what we typically install. This is an ultra rural install. It's a 12 meter system. It has satellite backhaul, has solar power, has enough battery backup to last about 3 days when the rainy season hits. So that does help. Then we have a bigger one that we can mount out there. We do a 20 meter self-supporting lattice tower. These take about 3 days to build. The other one takes like an afternoon to install. So somebody can pull up in a truck, install that site in an afternoon and leave by the evening. They can qualify the site. We have an automatic commissioning system for all the sites. They can run through it automatically. And it'll bring up the site, confirm the jitter's okay and the throughput, and you can make a call, you can send an SMS, you have edge data, all that stuff is hands off from our operation side. That's all run by one guy on site with a connection to a website. So this is a much bigger undertaking, and the sites that need this are highly populated, but it doesn't mean that they're any less remote. So getting, like, it's quite a big install. This is in Cameroon. This is in a site called Fell. This was our first 20 meter site there. So the transportation to get the material for a 20 meter self-standing lattice tower with a concrete base is interesting sometimes. But it gets done because everyone is also highly motivated to get it done in the area. They will help out and make sure that it's done right and assist because it's going to provide them really great coverage instead of their potentially maxed out 12-meter site. So that's what we have to go through there. I love this picture. This is like one of the first pictures that we got sent from that when it was all up and ready. It's like pretty high up on the tower and we're completely bubble centered. Like, it's not slowly pitching off to one side. They were pretty proud of that. So our guys built that one. And I think we have, well, I don't know what other countries are in right now. Anyway, we did about 1,000 sites in 2022 and we did 900 new sites last year. And we did 300 sites already the first quarter of this year. So it's three sites a day, basically. Kind of comes and goes, depends on the week. Towards the end of the year, there's always a big push because you want to get to some specific metric. And so there's dozens of teams in dozens of countries just installing sites one after the other. It's also a supply chain thing. It takes a lot of equipment to install 1,000 sites. Just moving them logistically around the globe to get that much material in those different places is quite a challenge. It's still a pretty small team though. We're headquartered in Milton Keynes in the UK, and they do everything there. They do site scouting. There's a team of people that sit there and just scour Google Maps, and we'll just go through Google Earth and find enclaves of people. Maybe there's not even a name associated with that location. They'll do a lat longitude. They'll send it to our local country manager, and they'll dispatch a scout team to go to that area and qualify the site, see if there actually is people there, if the imagery is current, if someone is, if it's moved on, if it was a temporary thing for like a mining activity, who knows. Qualify the sites, then we do a site survey, make sure there's no actual coverage there, normally no, and then we'll dispatch a team to install it, qualify the site, and bring it online. So that happens surprisingly quickly. I don't know how many sites we qualify per week, but I get a report every week on how many we do, and it's to me crazy. So anyway, we do everything there, all the design of the radio access satellite integration and core networks, all the power management, thermal design, manufacturing is all done there. And we've kind of become expert generalists because when we meet with like MTN or Orange or whatever, on their side of the call, there's 40 people. And they have every manager and mid-manager and then all the engineers from core networks, right? And then on our side, we have like David. You know, and we have David and me and Jonathan. And they're like, is everyone from your team there? Yeah, they are. Can anyone answer a question about core integration networks and how we're gonna do this translation between these two routing tables? Yes, okay. Not always the case on their side of the table. We actually don't even have a CTO. The CEO is a RF engineer from a long time ago. Michael Darcy's done tons of this work himself. He designed the 20 meter tower. Designed a lot of the amplification characteristics that are used in the base stations themselves. The COO gave me example Python code to run on a Raspberry Pi to automatically make phone calls on the tower. So the CTO position is currently vacant, but not really looking to be filled. We do everything ourselves. Like I said, tower design, power design, everything's ourselves. And this is the unit that we build. So we build this ARN900, it's using common off-the-shelf components. It has like the equivalent of a B200 SDR inside of it. It has an i7 Intel processor in it. The biggest challenge was getting it to work without a fan or an opening. So that took a long time. And that was done in, I think, the CEO's office with a heater in there in the summer. So we would literally be working alongside this thing and the whole office is just 1,000 degrees, and we're taking sensor readings off of the i7 for, you know, weeks at a time to plot what it does based on the ambient temperature. So that's all in-house design. And you open it up and it's common off-the-shelf stuff. But, oh, that's one thing. What happens if your common off-the-shelf stuff stops being manufactured? I don't know if you were aware, there was a chip shortage not too long ago. Has anyone priced out a B200, 3 years ago? It's approaching like used car territory. Yeah, they were impossible to get. So this is like a standard B200 Mini from Edis. So we had it, we had already B200 designs. We had a couple different manufacturing pipelines for B200s, and then they ran out of the Arctic 6 FPGA chip. So we looked everywhere, no one was making one. We contacted, we have an agreement with Intel and asked them if they could help. Not really, kind of, but not really. And then we just bit the bullet and redesigned it with an Arctic 7. And so this is our Arctic 7 based one. So, because you can buy those. So it's better to manufacture radios that you can buy the components for. So now we're doing about 80 to 100 of those ARIN units a week. They're getting assembled in Milton Keynes by two guys that know how to manufacture ARN units. So still pretty small. The Global Network Operations Center, I can go through the portal that we use to manage all this stuff later when I have my laptop hooked up, or we can do it on the side here if anyone's interested. I'll cut it for time, but that's basically a portal of our own engineering that does everything from site monitoring. It manages and monitors charge controlling and patterns of weather based on the site, and is this load typical for a Tuesday in March, or is it typical for a Tuesday in the summer, or is it abnormal for a Saturday period? Those kind of analysis on traffic, so that's all up there. And the infrastructure is a little bit tricky. It's not like running a cloud infrastructure company. It has to be fully distributed because sometimes an undersea cable disappears. Whoops. And so it all has to still kind of keep working. Or somebody steals the fuel to a data center. Great. So then that just disappears. And then we have to manage it and have it still keep running. So all these things kind of run independently for long periods of time. Without any direct intervention from our guys in the UK. And every country also has a 100% local team. We don't send anyone anywhere. They build up their own local talent, and then that team handles everything in country. Let's not. Let's do that later. Let's take a look at the portal later. Okay. Fleet management. Like, how do we manage? Right now, we have 1,400 and I think 50 ARN units deployed. How do you manage that? Across that many BSCs, it's surprisingly simple, and for now it's just flat files and Git. That sounds kind of crazy, but it works really well because you can version configs. So we have a flat file format. It's just like a CSV of the parameters that we actually care about, like the location area code, CI, the BSIC, a couple little pieces of information that we need to know about each site. And then we have a template generator that takes those things and just generates 250 BTS entries for every BSC based on the flat file. And that flat file is managed in Git, and every BSC has its own branch. And so you can compare, what did we do in Nigeria that worked better than in Liberia? What are actually the config differences between those two, et cetera, Osmocom directories? We can quickly do a diff on the branches and see what happened. So that's how it's managed. I wish I had a more exciting, complete management tool. We will eventually build one, but right now that works fine. Okay, Osmocom and range. So this has been like a decade long dance of, there's open source projects out there that do open source telephony stuff, but never really did anything together. Not really. Older times there were things together. I think that was also before my time joining the company. But kind of done two different things. So let me show you some range customer training slides from a decade ago. This is the traditional architecture. I would tell the customers this is a traditional architecture, and that's super complicated, and it is. It's really not that fun to deal with. But we built this, and you don't have to deal with any of that. So you just have the internet, you have an internet telephony service provider, and everything's SIP and RTP, and that's great. That is great. But eventually you may have to integrate with a core network. So we always did a lot of focus on the air interface, and I can say it's impressive because I don't work on that. So I can say that Harvin Samra's work is very impressive on the air interface. I can say that. This is a little thing that we were working on for years, and then now I think 2020 we had it presentable, and we presented this to AMN. So does anyone know what that is? what is that? It's spectrum, I know. But like, what is it? So that is a 3G signal in the middle. So UMTS in the middle, and then on the outside, is that like yucky noise? No, that's 2G on the outside. So you have a 2G, the beacon over here, TRX0's over here. It's a little bit hotter than the other ones. And then TRX1's right next to it. Then we move over 3 megahertz, and then we have TRX 3 and 4. And we can do that in a single SDR and a single radio chain. So you don't have two separate everythings on your tower, and so it's much, much cheaper. Well, who would be interested in that? AMN was very interested in that. This is spectrum layouts that we can accomplish with that. The blue along the middle is the 3G carrier. So you pick your 3G carrier, you say, I want to use 3017 in the middle. And then these are all the channels that we can access around it. And you can position those TRXs now anywhere in that range to above or below your 3G carrier. So AMN was quite interested in that because that would kind of change the way they deploy their equipment. Everyone's very excited about it because we're finally going to see all the range technology like out in the field and actually helping people. But we actually have to integrate it with a real core. Just that small detail. So how do we do that? Well, we did a lot of surgery on what we have to integrate it with Osmocom. We basically chopped OpenBTS into like thirds and pulled the middle bit out that just supports our way of talking to our transceiver. And then we wrote the other side that would talk to OsmoBTS. So to OsmoBTS, it just looks like OsmoTRX, roughly. But then on the other side of it, to our transceiver, it looks like OpenBTS doing all this fancy spectrum stuff. So then we put that in the middle, and that actually wasn't that bad. It was quite a good shortcut, actually. Then we had to integrate PS. That was mainly a testing task, and we were developing the ARN hardware to get deployed at the same time. So when that all kind of came together, then we did our first 2G integration with MTN Liberia. And we brought it up in March 2021. And I reread that ticket today. And it's very interesting because I had no idea what we were doing. I can just read the confusion in my answers of like, what do you mean two ASPs? Like, what do you mean two links? I don't know how to, what is SCTP? All these very silly questions. And now I'm looking back on it, it's quite funny. So we got that integrated. And we got the first ARN unit sent there. They got put up on some villages really close to our offices there, and we were carrying our first calls, and it's alive. 2G traffic is alive, everything's perfect, great, high five, you know, victory lap, we did it. But then very, very quickly, you run into some growing pains because you've only ever simulated so many calls. Now you have like 20 or 30 ARNs, and each one has 4 TRX, and each one has 38 traffic channels per ARN, and very quickly, Osmo Media Gateway was not very happy with that, and we started to run into some chugging problems with the Media Gateway. And this is a joke, I'm joking. This short diff fixed everything, because Sysmocom implemented the Media Gateway pooling, so we get assigned multiple Media Gateway pools and assign traffic to each Media Gateway pool, or Media Gateway instance. And I'm not sure if that support was already started and we finished it, or I don't remember exactly how it was. If it hadn't started and then we triggered it to start and that was then developed. A lot of this stuff is like that now. I can't remember. So now we assign 15 Media Gateway instances on every BSE. And that handles 250 BTSs, each with 4 TRX, each with 38 traffic channels. So that's working fine now. The next wave of 2G integrations was a bit rougher because we did exactly the opposite. Not two low traffic sites, easy to maintain. We looked at all the list of sites in MTN Nigeria where we have like 1,000 base stations, and we found all the sites in MTN Nigeria that were blocking and that they were complaining about metrics for those and said, we can fix your blocking. We will go there and we will take 2 VANU units off of the tower and we'll put 1 ARN unit on the tower and we'll crank the concurrent TCHs as high as they'll go, and then we'll eliminate blocking. And we did, we eliminated blocking. It went away, it just like went to zero. But that means you're passing a whole lot more traffic. So you're literally taking the busiest sites in the entire country that we operate, and you're passing them over one BSC. And the BSC CPU core was just busy, real busy, doing everything it possibly could to handle all this traffic. We were doing about 1,800 concurrent calls in the busy hour, sometimes 2,000. But usually once we hit towards 2,000, it would start to fall under its own weight and not be able to keep up. So we had to do some to figure out what was going on. And one of the main culprits was paging is just going nuts on the BSC. And partially a core network problem, because they had assigned us a LAC that like overlaps with metro areas, which makes no sense. So we were getting all this paging traffic for heavily populated areas and being sent over our satellites and VSAT to all these remote sites. So we arranged that we'd only have one location area code for this BSC. That helped a lot. But then there were still many other optimizations that had to happen to kind of bring it under control. We did get a lot of that done. I don't know how many times we talked about paging in the base station controller, but it got to the point where it was very stable, and now we can run 250 base stations on one base station controller. Before it was like 150. So that's good. That lets us deliver it much cheaper than we would be able to before, because if one server is, I don't know, 10 grand, and you have to physically bring it to the country, and you have to install it, and you have to integrate it, that's like hours and hours and hours of work. So we got rid of that. This is a good trivia question. Does anyone know what MBAC is? Please, someone know MBAC so we can like talk about it later. No? MBAC?
VSAT allocation strategy?
No? I wish it had something to do with VSAT. At least they'd know what we were talking about. MBAC. Measurement-based admission control. Nice. It's designed to reject traffic if the system is nearly at capacity, right? Kind of makes sense. If some sites are starting to, you're losing audio from some sites, like, ooh, we're at capacity, like, back off, slow down sites, and we'll just reject all your traffic for a while. Not really designed for VSAT connected anything, and it's a complete black box as to how the algorithm works, or when it's going to kick in, or what's going to make it mad and turn it on. But when it does turn on, it just rejects your entire base station controller. It operates at a base station controller level, so if you have one site out there in the middle of nowhere that is losing RTP packets towards the core will notice and say, "Oop, this base station controller seems overworked. I'm going to slow it down," and it'll just kill all the traffic to the base station controller. So you drop off 250 sites because one site is losing like 5% RTP, which happens. It's satellite. It rains in one little area, and you're killing like, I don't know, 8,000 Erlangs in a day. Not great. Yeah. So we had to figure out where it was coming from. The better is the enemy of the good. So it's like 100 lines of PHP code to parse T-Shark output and figure out where is this coming from. PHP is wonderful. I'm sorry, but I don't apologize for it. It's great, because everyone can understand it when you show them a snippet of it. Anyway, and so we get a list like this. I just watch ABIS for like 60 seconds, and then it would say, these are the worst sites. These are really bad. And there were so many of them that we thought something really is wrong. Well, that's not normal. We shouldn't be losing like over even 1% traffic to a handful of sites. That doesn't make any sense. All of our metrics were good. So we realized we weren't actually meaningfully measuring our backhaul. We were doing TCP or ICMP pings, and you'd see that they're coming back and they all look healthy. We do ping sweeps and they all look healthy, and the portal does that too. It measures jitter on the ping and everything looks fine. So how are we dropping like 8% RTP? More help from Sysmocom. What is going on here? This is when we were asking for raw TCP statistics. What do the sockets think is happening? What is the delay in the TCP socket and the application? How long does it think it's waiting for a packet to get back? Because your round trip times on ICMP have nothing to do with application level ICMP, or RTT. So we took this, we'd generate this data for every BTS, and then we'd just grab the data from the first RSL, which is always busy because it's the beacon, and group it by hubs and graph them together. And then we started seeing graphs like this. Well, I was like, that's kind of okay. Like, that's hub one. It's a very busy hub in Nigeria. This is not just ARN traffic. It's not just our the Osmocom-based traffic. This is also VANU-based traffic. It's a whole mix of traffic. But we're getting a pretty good sample from our stuff on there. But, so this is unact packets on the left here. It's kind of packets in flight, you know? We shouldn't be waiting for 1,000 of them, but you're always waiting for some of them with some backhaul latency. So like 40 is kind of the most that we'd want, packets in flight. And this is the RTT, it's satellite, so that's 600 milliseconds, which sounds horrible. But if you don't have any connection, like, that's fine. But it goes up. And then we were deploying sites, and I was measuring and generating these graphs every day. And this is after a week of deployments, like, whoa, there's a lot more going on there. That's not great either. And another few days of deployment, it's getting like hairier and spikier all over the place with these really big spikes up to even like 10 seconds RTT. What is that? And then it just completely disintegrated after how many more sites. So then we had to go and figure out what is really going on here. And it turns out the hub is completely oversaturated. So we have to send less traffic across the hub. Otherwise, we're just going to do this all the time and kill all the sites, and MBAC kicks in, and we're suddenly like halving our traffic in entire country. So what happens? The backhaul congests, the traffic exceeds the throughput, the queues grow up, the transmission times grow because they're just waiting in line to go through over the satellite. They're waiting in line to come back over the satellite. And we had to figure out a way to get rid of it. And we tried a couple things. BSC NAT, we wanted to bring up support from BSC NAT to do not SCCP Lite, but the full SCTP stack. You can say it better than me. I tried we tried to like shepherd that through and figure out how we could make it work, but there was too many moving pieces. Our statistics would be in different places. Our architecture would be totally different. And then we thought, what if we just, like, Osmux really works well. That's actually what we want. We just want Osmux. We want to put Osmux not there because we can't get BSC NAT like in there. So let's put it in between the BTS and the BSC. And that's what we had done. And that works really well. Way better than we thought. This is your own graph. This is from Osmocom's graph. It shows the back traffic savings for Osmux, because you're essentially getting rid of all RTP headers and compressing them in together and putting actual data just in the smallest possible form and combining multiple streams to go across the backhaul. And we even saw, even with really low traffic sites, with a batch factor of like grouping, saying like instead of every 20 milliseconds send a packet, every 40 milliseconds send a packet. We're already 600 milliseconds of RTT, so another 20 isn't a big deal. And that changed everything. Now all these low traffic sites are taking half the data, basically. And when you're talking about 800 sites, each one carrying a little bit of data, it made a big difference. And we lowered the threshold on the entire hub, and MBAC never showed up again. We have not had to deal with MBAC since then. Okay, so this is gonna go quick. 2G was pretty straightforward. 3G was not straightforward. 3G was not how I envisioned it, and I think that is due to me having absolutely zero experience with 3G. Kind of works that way. When you make a plan based on no experience, the plan ends up being a bit different. We had this kind of designed. No, that didn't work. It wasn't going to work either. And then we wanted to send, then the other reality was that we'd have to send RTP directly to the MSC co-located media gateways. That was never going to work. They never let us do that. This didn't work either. It doesn't matter. These are all proposals along the way internally. Like, that didn't work because I don't understand certain key things about 3G. This did work, and I made this graph last night. And I don't know what infected Mermaid JS for graph production in the time that I made the first graphs and the time that I made this. But it just decided that's how I'm going to lay it out, no matter what I did last night. It's like, no, that's the best way to organize this graph. Whatever. We have now full proxying between the access side and the core side, which is what we needed to accomplish because our satellite network cannot communicate with the core network by definition. We cannot have them talk to each other at all. So there has to be always something in the middle that translates from everything on the satellite side and everything on the core side. So we finally accomplished that, and that's Hello, the home node B that's co-located with OpenBTS, UMTS code. They communicate over a socket, a file socket, file descriptor, and then Osmo UPF to handle proxying GTP between the core and the access side. I didn't know what a UPF was. I didn't know what PFCP was, so I got quite the education along the way. No, this is the best way to do it. Are you sure? I don't know what any of the things are. No, it is, and yes, it was. It works fine. It's great now. So we have that up and running. This was in Rwanda. It was the first time it was working, saying we show activity on 2G and 3G with core integrations on 2G and 3G side, nothing mocked up, nothing faked. And one radio is doing all those things, and site power was still like 2.5 amps, which is amazing. So that's where everyone was excited. Another brief victory lap, and then the growing pains begin again. And this is our next round. I would show you some ping statistics in the background of my laptop, which is not here. This is the next round. See if you can spot the difference on this install. This is in Yebu, Nigeria. This is where we do all of our first installs in Nigeria, because it's really close to our offices and it's quite populated. So what's the difference between this site and the other sites that I showed before? It has a lot more solar power, that's for sure. But where's the satellite dish? There isn't one. That's a Starlink terminal on top of the tower. We have a agreement with Starlink, and we're rolling out sites with them now. That's the first live site. This just happened like 2 weeks ago. We had to build an entire exchange in the Lagos data center to correctly translate Starlink public traffic and put a private layer inside of it to translate what we're doing there to be accepted by the carrier and accepted as private traffic, converted right into their core. So we have a whole like translation layer in a data center that took months to build. We did that because now we have a pop of Starlink in a terrestrial data center and is accepted by a ground cell carrier. So that was quite the thing. Anyway, that's the next round. I defined 54 Starlink sites last night in the hotel room. So they're gonna start getting translated or transferred from Hub 1, our infamous Hub 1 in Nigeria, into Starlink Hub and offload all those busy sites onto Starlink. This one, we tested it. We could do 4 TRX on it and 38 traffic channels. I turned it up to 44 traffic channels to see, and it didn't blink. And mathematically, we can probably do 6 TRX on it with 60 some traffic channels and still not worry, because you're talking about 1 megabit instead of 1 or 2 megabits. Now you're talking about 50, you know, and ping latencies instead of 600, you're talking about 60. So it's, latency is the mind killer. It's working well now. And this is the other round that's on its way. We got the first 4G code built into our firmware. I didn't really talk about the firmware because I don't have my, I can't show it anyway. What we have, what gets installed on those little ARN units is about 70 megabytes right now. It used to be about 50, but I enabled all the debug symbols on everything because we kept running into things in the field. So 70 megabytes with debug symbols. It's our own custom little Linux install and has all the components pared down and pre-configured with a little script and a user interface, and we can control it remotely and all that stuff. So that's the first 4G install there. And that is up in our test lab in England. So first 4G data streams over an ARN unit, and nothing changed about the RF. So when these get rolled out in the field, like we just did in Liberia, I brought the 3G Liberian sites on 2 days ago. Nobody had to go there. Nobody had to change anything. You just send a software upgrade and change the config, and then it's in 3G mode, and That's it. So we're trying to do the same thing with 4G. Don't touch anything on the site, and you can just put out a software upgrade and a config change, and now you have 500 4G sites. So I think that's kind of all I have. I had this slide in closing because I've, you know, people search for it online. Can Osmocom integrate with Huawei? And no one will really say, because I understand, like, maybe that customer doesn't want to say that they did it, and they don't want to say that, well, that's based on this open source stuff. Like, it's fine because it works great. I mean, it does. You know, like, we went through, those are the pain points. I'm not hiding the, I could just say it worked fine out of the box. No, it didn't, but you fixed it. I mean, and we fixed our stuff. Our stuff was broken too. We had radio interference. We had some weird spurious RF thing on the third TRX that took a FPGA god to look at and figure out what is going on. He figured it out, okay. But it can be made to be incredibly stable. These sites are now incredibly stable. There are 1,400 active 2G sites running this stuff right now. And yeah, you can make real mobile networks with it. And you guys know how to engineer for real mobile networks, whatever that means. And yes, it works with Huawei in the CS and PS sides in 2G and 3G, and Ericsson on CS and PS in 2G and 3G, and ZTE on PS in 3G, because that's the only one we've been backed into a corner to support. But I'm sure it works everywhere. That's it. It does really work everywhere. So thank you, because it's really fun to work with. And any questions you can ask now? I don't think time lets it.
Well, we have a couple of minutes for questions now regarding the demos you wanted to show. I would suggest we do it after dinner in the unstructured.
Yeah, I have I wrote a piece of code to strip IPs out of output for the presentation, because like pipe remove IPs to this little thing, and it'll just chew all the IPs out of the output for the presentation. But yeah, you can check out sites. You can see what a config file looks like for something that integrates against 11 MSCs with redundant SPXs. Like, that sounds really exotic and wild, but it all works. It's just a bigger config file, you know?
Okay. You said you use Git and flat files. So how does it work in detail? You update the Git repository, you push the changes, and then how do they end up on the thousands of ARNs in the field?
It's only managing the base station controllers. It's only managing the BSCs. So pushing out to each individual site is more painful still. I can push things with curl, you know? I can say, like, hey, post these new values to this user interface page and do it for every ARN in the field, please. Or make this VTY modification. When we had the timeout, we had a timeout issue that was, the timeouts were biting us, so we had to remove the timeouts on all these units. Well, upgrading 1,400 units at 70 megabytes is like a actual real tangible cost of satellite backhaul. It's like not trivial. So it's better to just send a VTY command, like SSH in, do VTY stuff, remove all the, change the thing you want to change, and then get out of the system. So that's kind of the next step. The managing BSCs is pretty painless, but managing the fleet of 1,400 units can be painful. Mainly the configs don't change. But like, we want to align all of them to use Osmux Batch Factor 2. Well, you kind of have to change every single one right now to use Osmux Batch Factor 2, or run the VTY sprayer across all of them. But that will be the next thing. When they come up, they ask for their config, like a product would. It would ask for its config, and it says, here's your config, and takes the config, and that's it. So then we just have to restart them anytime we want to ask for a config update. Still painful, but that's on the list. When we get to like 10,000 of them, then it's inevitable, you know.
Hey, could you talk a little bit about the power requirements of the solar panel power, battery capacity, and maybe the current consumption?
That is a fantastic question. and that is my least area of expertise. I can show you the charging graphs and stuff. We read the charge controllers constantly, and we can see how much they're loading and how much peak power they reach, and then how quickly they discharge, and if they're, you know, all that. I don't know. The new, like, I could pull it up in my email somewhere that shows how many watts each iteration has. The new Starlink, I think it's like 700 watts of solar charging capacity. And the lithium battery bank got bumped up, I think, at some point too. I don't know. That's my least area of expertise.
Yes, I also have a question. You have shown the spectrum, there the left and right, you have the GSM carriers, and in the middle the 3G carrier. This is all perfectly lined up, but would it also line up in the downlink? I guess no, there would be some shift, right? And
If the downlink is the same as, like, as equally clean as the uplink? Or what do you mean?
But what I mean is, The GSM carriers have in the uplink direction, it might be in different locations of the spectrum.
The duplexers are the same. The amp that we built is incredibly linear, and it's been fine-tuned to be incredibly linear all the way across at a very specific power level. So we're not getting any sort of, also not my area of expertise, RF is like the ghost in the closet, you know. If it doesn't work, I just call someone and say, this is ridiculous, something's broken. But it's all been designed to be very, like, predictable, very linear and even and nicely and well behaved, so that whatever we throw at it, 3G and 2G over here, or 3G and 2G hotter, or 3G hotter than 2G, or whatever, it's going to behave well out all the way out the antenna. I wish I could say more.
Okay.
That's why Harvin should have been here. We talked about it, if he should come or not, and it just didn't work out, but yeah, he would know all about that. Also, the 3G sites are, just for definition, they're HSPA plus sites. So they're not just like 3G in name only. They're, you know, 3.75G or whatever you want to call it, very nearly 4G speeds.
Okay, thanks.
I think we have to close the questions now. We can always discuss later, of course.
Gladly. Anything you guys want to look at or whatever, see on sites, is totally fine. So.
Yeah. We need to head to the main lobby for the lunch where the buffet is, and the buffet closes at 2 p.m., so we have 1 hour. And we have another half hour of break, but just keep in mind the food ends basically. It supposedly ends at 2 p.m. You see how this looks like in reality. Okay. Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Very nice.